On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Just last week, Apple hit 25 billion on its worldwide apps download number. That is huge and only part of the picture. There are 500,000 Apple apps out there now, approaching that for Android. And the numbers just go up. Apps to do all kinds of things on smartphones and tablets, to find friends, to find food, to find a place to sleep, to shop, to learn a new language, or simply translate that language for you in real time. Apps are becoming like a sixth sense these days, bringing computer power right out into the world, in the palm of our hands, into everyday lives. This hour on Point, the age of apps. You can join the conversation. Are you all apped up? To do what? And what apps are now sewn into your daily life? How do they change that life? Are you app-free and wondering at all the hoopla? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And you can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me in the studio today is Hiawatha Bray, Boston Globe tech reporter, gadget guru. He's got all his mobile devices loaded with apps laid out here on this big table. Hiawatha Bray, welcome back to On Point. It is so great to have you.
Glad to be here.
And with us from down in Austin, Texas, in the middle of app heaven right now, where she's been at the South by Southwest Interactive Festival, is Christina Bonnington, writer for Wired's Gadget Lab and a big part behind their huge Wired app guide last year. She was in San Francisco last week for the new iPad unveiling, and now she's watching for fresh apps that are taking off. Christina Bonnington, thank you so much for joining us from South by Southwest and Austin. Great to have you with us.
Hi, Tom.
So I'm looking at least one headline coming out down there, Christina, is the apps buzz is location, location, location. I know this is one of your themes as well. I mean, apps take all this out of the box on the table. They take it out of computer land and put it right in our hands, right out in the world, Christina.
Yes. Location-based apps that are telling you where people are around you, they're a huge thing here at South by Southwest. One of those apps is called Highlight, and it shows you people that you may know, people that are friends of friends that are around you. So you can pull it up, and you know you're walking through the airport, you're walking through the convention center, and you can see all of these people that you have some sort of connection with. It's really cool.
So is it kind of a GPS-based thing that they're signed up, you're signed up, and if they get close to you, Highlight tells you?
Yes.
How do you know how close that comes? Like, you know, so-and-so is within 100 feet of you, is within 2 blocks of you, is within a mile of you?
So it doesn't get that specific. I do wish it were. And I was actually talking with people the other day, and we wish it had a compass on it so you could see, oh, this person's near me, but which way are they? Like, I know, you know, this person just walked by me and, you know, it says 10 seconds ago they were next to me, but where are they? There's so many crowds.
I know that South by Southwest scene in the huge convention hall there would be really handy on the floor of the convention hall. But even so, Hiawatha, I mean, here's just one example. Mm-hmm. Wherever you are, somebody that you know, care about, shows up, they're near you. This is no longer happening just off in digital land. This is happening in real land. Two people getting together because there's the app.
Well, yeah, but I mean, the real center, I think, this week for location technology is Boston, of all places. And here's why. Uh-huh. This is a story I'm going to be writing about tomorrow. There is a company called Wayfarer, which has created a fascinating little new app. And one of the first places it's going to be available for trying is over at the Prudential Mall.
This is a mall in Boston. What's it do?
What does it do? Well, you know how you need GPS to help you figure out how to get to, like, Fenway Park or someplace
Lots
like that.
Lots of people
use
it
Or the convention
now.
Center. Mm-hmm. What happens when you're there? Now, Fenway Park's outdoors, so it might not be a problem, but you're indoors, you're in the convention center. How do you find your way around? What you need is GPS for inside a building, and that's what Wayfarer is creating.
How does that work? I mean, GPS doesn't usually take you right down
it
to the
doesn't
floor
work.
Plan.
It doesn't work. You can't use GPS inside a building. It won't work. So you got to do something else. What they did was they used all the Wi-Fi routers inside the building. They map the electronic signals from all the Wi-Fi routers inside the building. Then they created an app that allows you to turn this app on, and just from picking up all the different Wi-Fi signals, it calculates where you are inside the mall.
This sounds like a Mission Impossible thing, whether you're at the convention center in Austin, Texas, or right here.
I'm in here on Sunday because they told me about it. It officially launches on Tuesday, but I went there yesterday after church to check this out. You turn it on, and you're walking past the Barnes & Noble, and on your phone it says, yeah, you're walking past Barnes & Noble, and a little emblem appears on the phone, and you touch it, and it says, this is Barnes & Noble. This is America's largest bookstore. And if they are having a sale at that moment, you get a little thing that says, we're having a sale on this, that, or the other, and you're going to be walking through the mall with this in your hand. It'll tell you how to get to any store in the mall, and if any store has a sale, ads start popping up on your phone telling you, here it is, 20% off.
And there's the app world coming right into the palm of your hand.
Absolutely.
Christina, this goes to a kind of theme you've been on, which is that this no longer is just taking us off to kind of play with one another in the digital realm. It's pushing people into more aware interaction with each other and the physical world around them. Mm-hmm.
Yes, this is true. There are so many apps that are enabling transactions and interactions in real life. I mean, there's Airbnb that you can rent a room or a bed from someone else, and so you're meeting digitally. You're meeting on your mobile device, and then you can meet someone new in real life. There's a few like garage sale type apps. Rumger is one, Yard Sale is another, and that way you can figure out what's for sale around you. You can pick up a new bed. You can pick up a new bedside table or something.
Can we just talk about those for a second? You mentioned Airbnb, and this is this interesting thing where it not only changes relationships, it changes commerce, because now anybody can sort of figure out a room in their house that they want to turn in. They're going to say, this is available for the night. Let's say I'm traveling like you, Christina, in Austin. It's not my hometown, but there I am. And I don't necessarily want to stay at the Hyatt or the Red Roof Inn. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, anybody and everybody who's offering a room for rent for the night in Austin, Texas, is here in this app online. And I see a photograph of it. I see the terms. Here's how much it is. And boom, Hiawatha, there is a new kind of commerce, these turning homes into B&Bs that just weren't.
Absolutely. I mean, in a sense, it's sort of like the same sort of thing we saw with the rise of a service like eBay or Craigslist. The internet enabled this very granular commerce where you can sell even small things or things for a limited period of time far more efficiently than you ever could before. But now with apps, you can access these kinds of deals on the fly, in your hand, anytime you want to. You're right. It's amazing. Now I know exactly where to go if I wanted to stay in Berlin this week, because there's this beautiful loft in Berlin, Germany, that's like $150 a night, and I'm going, wow. Much nicer than staying in a hotel.
Yeah.
You're right. It's amazing. And I think, isn't Airbnb the one that was started by the guy who started LinkedIn?
Is that right, Christina?
Oh, I can't remember,
I believe
actually.
It's the same guy who launched LinkedIn, who's funding Airbnb. So these are people with a solid track record, and they're coming up with these ideas because the apps make it possible. And behind it all, I think this has to be really understood. The reason this is all happening is because these portable devices connect to the internet. A lot of apps, if you just had an app, I mean, remember in the early days of personal computers, the software we used, like word processors,
right.
They didn't talk to other things. They didn't talk to other devices. They were self-contained. These apps wouldn't be particularly useful, except that what they do is they connect us to hugely powerful computers behind the scenes that can do all kinds of amazing stuff that you could never do by yourself with a little computer in your pocket.
So we're alerted to all kinds of points of interest between one another, and then making those connections. You mentioned, Christina, Rumger, R-U-M-G-R, an app here, and I've just pulled it up on a smartphone here, and this is, it is kind of like a rummage sale spread out over, it shows me stuff for sale within 1 mile of where I'm sitting now. I guess I'm looking at laptops here, and there's laptops for sale, here's within 2 miles, here's within 5 miles. I mean, that's always an issue if you, when you talk about buying things online, you might want to see them. Are they near or far? Am I going to have to drive, 40 miles to look at this thing? No, forget it. Here it is, Christina. Not only what's for sale, but what's for sale very nearby. I could be over there in 5 minutes looking at it.
Yeah, and the thing about Rumger is right now it doesn't have a search functionality, so it's all about serendipity. You're seeing, what's for sale that's close to you, but you can't actually search for something specific. So it's enabling this like whole new way of, thinking about commerce and thinking about, buying things and connecting you with people that are nearby in your community. I love how apps now are kind of enabling people to get to know their community a little better. I think Rumger is one of those apps. And it's fun seeing these new interactions pop up through apps.
It's kind of x-raying the whole community and setting around us the kind of transparency there. What else is cool on your
list? Well, no, I mean, there are other things. I think you're right about the fact that one of the things that's happening here is the ability to use these technologies to bring you closer to the world you inhabit right now. I mean, for example, e-commerce has terrified traditional brick-and-mortar merchants because it's harder for them to, I mean, they're saying basically the business is all going online. But an app like Wayfarer, for example, brings people into the mall. There's another app I've talked about sometimes called Shopkick, where you put an app on your phone and merchants will give you rewards for simply entering the store because it can detect your physical entrance into the store. So they see you're there, you get rewards, you get discounts just for walking in. So these apps are a way to bridge this idea between the internet and the physical store because they're actually creating apps that make you want to go to a real world location and interact with people.
You know, and I have to say, it's the apps are increasingly sort of messing with my prejudices about the digital world, which I always thought, digital world, it takes me away from the things. It takes you away from people. It takes you away from the tactile, from... Well, here it's pushing back the other way, and I can be kind of resistant on these things, but if it's going to create more relationships, it's going to create more awareness, it's going to create more transparency. I worry a little bit about privacy, but... This siren song, Christina, where it's actually pulling us out into the world and into understanding of one another, this is messing with some of my personal old prejudices about the digital realm, Christina.
Yeah. I mean, I think there are, you know, so many apps that are helping us, you know, get to know new people, and you know, they're creating all these sorts of new experiences we haven't had in the past. You know, when we first started getting apps on our phones, you know, a lot of times we're pulling them out at dinner and we weren't talking to people. But now we're actually using them to meet new people.
Christina Bonington is down at South by Southwest Interactive in Austin, Texas, and with us today. Hiawatha Brea of the Boston Globe is with us right here in the studio. Listeners, we're talking about apps. Have you gone wild for apps? And what have you got? What have you found? What really works? What's changed your life, maybe? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the amazing, you'd have to say, given the numbers exploding, you'd have to say, given the numbers, world of apps now around smartphones and iPads, tablets, and how they're changing the way a whole lot of people live and play and get things done. Christina Bonington joins us. She's a staff writer for Wired's blog, Gadget Lab. She's this week down in Austin, Texas at South by Southwest Interactive there. Hiawatha Brea is with us, great tech reporter and columnist for the Boston Globe, right here in the studio with apps aplenty on all kinds of devices on the table here. You can join us. What do you think? Are these for you? Are they changing the way you live, the way you interact with people? After Angry Birds and Fruit Ninja and Words with Friends, what matters, really matters in your app collection? What do you use a lot every day? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. I want to hear about more apps that you guys have said. What's happening? What's cool? What's going on?
Well, there are so many things that I just live by every day. I mean, I'll just give you an example. Yeah. This is just a weird taste of mine. I love old-time radio, the old shows like, you know, the Shadow and the Lone Ranger and all that stuff. There's this app I have on my phone called Old Time Radio, and it just plays these things.
From the 30s, 40s, 50s.
Whenever I feel like listening to one, it has this index of them. I just touch it, and I'm sitting there listening to Suspense or the Shadow or something like that. And I just do this almost every night, and it's entertainment, and I can listen to it anytime, anywhere. It's wonderful. Give you another example of something. It's changing the way you look at television. This is the whole idea of social television.
Social TV. Television. What's that?
Social TV basically relates to the fact that when you're watching a TV show, there are probably thousands of other people watching the exact same thing.
And we often think of that as this isolating thing. You're sitting alone in the pale blue glow.
Exactly. But that has started to change. And this has been changing for years. Years ago, when I used to watch the series 24, the Miami Herald humor columnist Dave Barry had a blog where people would talk about it while the show was on.
Okay.
Now that's become commonplace. And you can go and get an app called Social Guide, and you can see who else is watching the particular show you're looking at that moment, and what are they saying about it? And you can dive in and join the conversation. And it turns out that many thousands of people are doing it. About 70% of all Americans, when they're watching TV, are also online. It's become commonplace.
I'm looking at this right now. It's called Social Guide. I've just pulled it up here. Yeah, here's somebody. I guess they're watching Morning Joe.
That's right.
And you, so, you know, Obama's speeches and policies are like onions dipped in chocolate, desserts for suckers. Joe's talking about it. Mika's talking about it.
There you go. And
here's another. Says the Mika, talking about the Southern primaries, and she's using y'all in the conversation. And they say, hey, wait a minute. You know, how dumb do you think Southern people are using it? It's condescending for Mika to use that.
Absolutely. And no, I mean, this is exactly what's going on.
But do you do it now? When you're watching TV, you're also kind of looking down in your hand?
Absolutely, and millions of people are doing the same thing. I just wished I had been watching this when Downton Abbey was on, when they had the episode where the guy had amnesia. Because I'm throwing stuff at the TV,
right.
And I should have been tweeting about it, and now you can.
What else have we got here? There's an app called Karma, Christina. What's it do?
So Karma is a new app that it integrates with Facebook, and you can actually send real life gifts to your friends. So it analyzes the language of all the posts that people are putting up, you know, and so it can tell that, oh, someone, you know, they just graduated. Everyone's saying congratulations,
right.
Or they just had a baby and everyone's so excited. It collects this information and categorizes it. So you can see who's having birthdays, who's celebrating something, who's having a bad day.
And if I want to send a gift, what's it do? How's it work?
It's really easy. So all you have to do is you can send them a text message. And then so you pick out what sort of gift you want to send them. They have a curated list of all these different types of gifts, and there's different categories, so you can make it easy. You know, if you're sending it to like a 20-something male, you know, there's a whole category of gifts.
You know, yeah.
Yes, yeah, and they're priced at different levels, so maybe around $10 or $25. You can pick something in a particular price range, and you send it to them through a text message, and they can check out that text message. Pick it up, check out the gift that you've sent them on their mobile device. And if they like it, you know, they can accept it. And then after they've accepted that gift, that's when you're charged for the gift. So
it's gonna be, what if they don't like it? What happens then if they don't like it?
If they don't like it, they can either swap it out for another gift. They can change the color if they want. If it's like a shirt or something that's available in a few different colors, they can swap it out for something else in the same price range, or they can donate it to charity.
The gift or the equivalent money, I suppose, would just go to
the equivalent money in that case.
So all that happens kind of in the blink of an eye there. That's pretty cool. There's one I'm reading about here called Word Lens. I hadn't seen this one, but
don't think I'm familiar with that one. Tell me about it.
Well, it says it translates printed words in one language into another using the smartphone's built-in video camera. So, for example, you're traveling abroad, you can't understand what a sign says. Hold up your phone, you know, point your camera at that sign, and the English is immediately appeared. So so far it's just in Spanish, but hold your phone up to a Spanish sign. And it says, you know, whatever it has to say. I mean, that's kind of...
No, well, that makes incredible. A lot of sense. I'm glad you brought that up because it's turning out that the camera inside a smartphone is turning out to be one of the most powerful features that these apps are taking advantage of. I can give you several examples.
Yeah.
I was at CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, in January, and I found this absolutely amazing app developed in Israel called Eye on Road.
Okay.
Now, you know, you don't want to run up behind somebody. You're driving down the highway. You got to keep the proper interval or anything like that.
Yeah.
You don't want to tailgate. Suppose your phone could tell you you're too close to the car in front of you. That's what this app does. You buy one of those mounting brackets that you mount the phone in the bracket.
So you put it in the front of the windshield on
the
dashboard.
You put it in front of
the
windshield with the camera facing outward.
And it becomes
the phone just looks there and
it says, backseat driver.
Exactly. The phone calculates how far you are from the car in front of you just by looking at the image of it. It's amazing and it works. I thought it was not calibrated so well on my phone. It let me get too close before the alarm went off.
Yeah.
But if you get too close, an alarm goes off and says, back off. You're too close to that guy. And it's using the camera inside the phone. And then, of course, there's something that everybody at Stop and Shop already knows about. If you shop at Stop and Shop, about 50 of their stores, you know, they have those handheld scanners for shopping.
Yeah.
Well, at about 50 of those stores, you can now use your phone as the scanner. You just put an app on your phone. It's free. You download it at Stop and Shop. Then you're walking down the aisle. You just point at your phone at the barcode. And you check out your own groceries as you walk through the store with your phone. And it works.
That's pretty cool. Christina, I mean, the phone in your hand does become like a tool. There's one app called Bump where you can...
Oh, yeah.
What is it, Christina? You share data information from your phone just by bumping it against somebody else's?
Yeah, so it uses the accelerometer and gyro in your phone. When you get near someone else who has bump, you can bump your phones together and it shares your contact information. And so here in the U.S., it's mostly used in social settings rather than, you know, professional networking environments. Yeah. So it's you're at a party or something, you're meeting someone new and you want to stay in touch with them. And so you can bump your phones and immediately have their email, their Twitter, Facebook. And it's just
incredible.
A really easy
how
way to
they
connect.
Do it, I just don't understand. What they say is yeah. that the two phones are transmitting over the bump network.
Okay.
They each transmit the fact that they have bumped at that precise moment.
Right.
And at the computer at the back end calculates which of those two phones, out of all the phones in the world, it
right.
must be these two phones.
Amazing.
And then it just shares information between just those two phones.
Never mind the fist bump. Now
yeah.
I have your contact information and you have mine.
Yeah.
Keep it real for us here, Hiawatha. I mean, a lot of people are really into this and downloading.
Right.
25 billion, Apple said, have been
Absolutely.
Downloaded now, and 10 billion or more mm-hmm. Android.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, this is a world not everybody's playing in.
Oh, well, more and more people are. Let's get this sorted out. First of all, about one out of every three Americans now has a smartphone. I just got
okay.
that statistic last week. About 100 million of us or so have smartphones. But that means about 200 million of us don't. In addition, I just saw a story last week that said that most of these apps, people use them a few times and they never use them again. A huge number of apps are downloaded that nobody
they're
is ever...
They're free or they're cheap.
They're
and you
free
use
or
a
they're
times
cheap.
And
you
done.
Try them and then
yeah.
you forget about them. Yeah. Most of these apps, we end up using a small number mm-hmm. of reliable apps. So a lot of this, these guys are just throwing everything at the wall to see if it sticks. But that said, I mean, there's no question that this is only going to expand in its usefulness because these things are so useful and because the internet services behind the scenes that make us, that give them their power are just going to become more and more sophisticated and let us do more and more things. So, no, this is not overhyped at all.
Here's one called Shazam.
Oh, everybody knows Shazam.
Well, to lay it out.
Oh, come on. That's the one where you aim the phone at the speakers of your car, say, when you're driving down the road in order to find out what's the name of that song I'm listening to. It has a huge database of music, and it can usually tell you what music you're listening to. I was very disappointed. I was listening to a live broadcast of Don Giovanni over the weekend,
okay.
and it didn't recognize Mozart's opera.
Yeah.
But usually...
I think I heard that over the weekend. This is where he's saying, he's had 600 women here,
oh, yeah,
900
absolutely.
Women there,
that's Don Giovanni,
2,000
right.
women in Spain.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, I'm into opera, but it didn't recognize Don Giovanni. But I've had other more obscure classical music,
yeah.
and I've had Shazam recognize it immediately. So
you're not left sitting there thinking, I love this. What is this? Christina,
yes.
it's listening with you. It's telling you what it is when it works.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it has... I've had the best luck with pop songs and, you know, more common songs. I've had trouble with some classical music. And then it also doesn't work if you try to hum a song, especially a classical song. That just doesn't work.
Let's
yeah, by the way,
yeah.
that feature is actually built right into Windows Phone. You know, Microsoft is trying to get back into the game
yeah,
with Windows
yeah,
Phone
yeah.
7. They didn't even bother with an app. They actually built it's built right into Windows Phone, so you
wow.
can just turn it on and it'll tell you what you're listening
you
to.
You want to know what it is? This is what it is. John in Nashville is calling. John, thanks. You're on the air, John.
Hi, Tom. How's it going?
Pretty well. What's going on?
Oh, nothing. My wife and I are getting ready to launch our own app, so we just wanted to say thanks for covering it, and it's for the positive. It's completely taken over our life, and it's awesome. It's been a blessing.
You're launching an app. Does that mean you sat down and wrote the software? You've built it? You've created an app? What's it do, John?
We are in the cocktail business with the kind of, you know, the past 10 years, this kind of craft cocktail resurgence. What we are offering, it's called Pour Taste, P-O-U-R. It's a curated list of kind of the bars and the restaurants in all 50 states that focus on that very seriously. And because we do that full time, we travel a lot and we'll go to cities, you know, and we won't know exactly where to go. And so it's just kind of a curated list, kind of a professional person's view on, hey, these are the best places to go drink. So,
but am I tracking a particular yeah. drink? Let's say I want a Jiminy Cricket. I don't even know if there is such a thing. But you're going to tell me what bar will pour it for me?
Yeah. I mean, and it's been great. And you guys mentioned a few minutes ago that it's completely changed the face of commerce. And it totally has for us. I mean, you know, kind of the past couple of years of my life, bartending turning into consulting and writing, and now it's like, though I'm not physically designing the app, I've partnered with a developer to where it's part of my title, it's part of my resume. It's been really nice, you know.
The drinking man and woman's app.
There you go.
Get to the bar and find your drink. Good luck with it, John. How's the app business doing these days, Hiawatha?
Well,
I mean,
I don't know.
Lot of people flooded into this world. You know, everybody's making apps, it seems, at a certain
right.
point.
Well, from what I understand, people tend to make more money for building Apple apps than Android apps. But, I mean...
Why?
Well, bigger customer base. Well, I don't know about bigger at this point, but I think the customer base is more willing to pay is probably what it is. Mm-hmm. And also, I think you tend to find that a lot of Apple apps are higher quality because Apple does a better job of really curating the apps and holding them to higher standards. Mm-hmm. Google only just announced a couple of weeks ago that they are finally launching a program to test the apps in their online store to make sure that they aren't full of viruses. So they're finally doing that. I mean, frankly, Apple, the whole app universe with Apple is more secure and more stable than the Google universe because of this testing, because of the higher quality, and because Google's Android is very confusing. My phone right now is running one version of Android. Lots of other phones are running other versions of Android. The phone companies, and not Google, decides which version of Android is going to be on your phone, and the apps might not run on one phone or another phone. But it's all very confusing. That doesn't happen with Apple.
Yeah, Christina, they're trying to rationalize this. I think there's this new Google Play, sort of the equivalent of iTunes, Christina, that Google's rolling out. What are they doing there?
I mean, I think they're just trying to get into sort of the iTunes space that Apple's been dominating since, you know, iTunes came out. We've been talking about Play a lot here at South by Southwest. I mean, I think Google's trying to kind of hone in on some of these areas that Apple has been dominating for a while now. So Play, iTunes, that's one area. I think they're also trying to get their developers more knowledgeable, give them more tools so that they can create better quality apps. Apple kind of historically has had, you know, these APIs for developers to use so they can make these very streamlined, very Apple iOS looking apps. And so Android apps just kind of look different. They go all over the place. You know, the UIs, some of them are just really a mess. You know, some of them are
It's because Android is an open source operating system.
Right.
It's a free fire zone. Anybody can do what they want, basically. And you end up with this great inconsistency of user experience, which is the big drawback. Plus, as I said, there are so many different versions of Android floating around out there that you don't know what you're going to get when you put the app on the phone. I don't think I've ever had, or maybe once or twice, I've had an Apple app crash on me. I've had Android apps crash on me all the time.
And there are 400,000 or something Android apps out there now. There must be some darn good ones among them. Let me go to Jenny in Williamsburg, Virginia. Jenny, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm going to ask if your guest can tell me, what do you do if you have an idea for an app? I'm not in the position to develop one like your previous caller. I just have a really great idea.
You know, I'm not sure. I assume you would have to find a developer who would be willing to work with you on that. You'd have to find somebody who would know how to write an app. I'm not one of them. And sit down with them, because that certainly does happen. There are people who say, I have a great idea for an app, but I don't know how to write one. I'll have to go out and find somebody in the software community. You might even consider calling a local college or university, because there might be some people there willing to work with you.
Hey, Jenny, we don't want you to give away the family jewels here, but what, broadly speaking, what kind of app to help you do what?
Well, I don't even mind giving it away. I just want it done.
Okay, then. Let's hear it.
I think it'd be a great idea. Now that, you know, texting is being outlawed while you're driving, which is a great idea, and calling in a lot of states, I think it'd be awesome if there was, like, an auto reply that you could set before you get in the car or even as you're driving, like a one-button thing you could push to reply to the person.
There are so many apps out there already that do that. It's not even funny.
Well, let's hear what's out there. I appreciate your call. I mean, Google Voice, just for starters, isn't that?
I don't know if Google Voice does it. Darn, I didn't bring a list of them, but I have reviewed apps that do this where, you know what they do? Here's the really amazing thing. You turn this app on, and the moment you start to drive your car, the accelerometer in your phone knows that you are moving faster than 5 miles an hour.
And so it won't take a call, or it has an auto reply or something?
It locks out the phone, sends an auto reply, says he's driving, you're not, he's out of pocket, he's driving, don't even bother him. There are a bunch of apps out there that do that already.
That
Absolutely.
Sensory capacity of the telephones, the smartphones themselves, Christina,
Absolutely.
Really comes into play so many ways, whether you're bumping or finding or accelerating.
They have sight, they have touch, they have feeling to some extent, because they can detect when the phone is being moved.
Yeah.
About the only thing they can't do is smell. I'm serious.
just stand by. I mean, this Christina gets into this sort of sixth sense arena, or what, empowered senses, when the smartphone in your hand is as so many avenues of perception, in effect,
exactly, yes.
already operating, Christina.
Yeah, it almost seems like it's become an extension of ourself. We can store our memories in it. We can just offload a whole bunch of information that we used to have to remember. Mm-hmm. Just now it's on our phone. Now it's in our pocket. You know, I don't have a shoebox filled with old snapshots anymore. I have Instagram. I have my my gallery, all my photos on my phone. It's really phenomenal. It's so interesting just to see how, you know, I can use my brain for other things now. I don't have to remember all these different facts and reminders and
to-dos.
Smartphones
make you stupid. Smartphones make you stupid.
Or way smart, I'm not sure. Hi, Hiawatha Bray with the Boston Globe. Christina Bonnington in Austin, Texas with Wired. Please stand by. We're talking about apps, applications on smartphones and tablets, iPads, the whole works. You can join us. Has your app ecosystem improved your life or not? 800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the amazing, exploding world of apps now around smartphones and iPads and tablets and how they're changing the way a whole lot of people live and play and get things done. Christina Bonnington is with us. She's staff writer for Wired's blog Gadget Lab. She's at South by Southwest in Austin, Texas this week. Hiawatha Bray with the Boston Globe, tech reporter, columnist there, is with me in the studio. You're welcome to join us as well. Has your app ecosystem improved your life? How? What makes you feel, I don't know, empowered, organized, more effective? Has it made you more impulsive, quicker on the trigger finger to buy, to act? Is it getting in the way of old-time living for you? Where's this app age taking us? We're at 800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK. And we've got all kinds of response online here. It's really funny. I mean, you got people who love them, people who don't love them. John wants an app that would alert the user that he or she is speaking too loudly into the cell phone. pipe down there.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, Steve, this is interesting, too. A lot of people are using apps a lot. Steve says, the digital age has taken feminine beauty off the streets. Girls used to walk heads up, hips swinging proudly in the fashion of their time. Now they look like Dustin Hoffman in Midnight Cowboy, shoulder to their ears, hunched over in search of some magical connection.
I think he's just walking down the wrong streets.
Zerlip says, try SoundHound. It's like Shazam, but it can recognize a person humming a tune and can also provide lyrics for karaoke. David says, I find the influx of apps into everyday activities to be degrading to the experience of living. The example that Mr. Bray gave regarding walking around a mall with your nose buried in your iPhone is perfect. People just no longer pay attention to where they are and what's around them with their overuse of GPS and smartphones and averted gazes. And how about it, Hiawatha? We're all walking around like Dustin Hoffman in Midnight Cowboy.
I love that line. He's got a point, but I think he's making too much of it because I think, in a sense, it's almost the opposite. You can do that, but on the other hand, I find that these apps actually draw you more into the world by making you more aware. I mean, like the example of the app that tells you what the music is. You can listen to the music around you and hear it. You can scan what's happening around you and get more information about your immediate surroundings. I don't know, the way I use it, I think it brings me into closer touch with the world.
Christina, what about it? We're hunched over, you know, the cell phone sort of hunched against our shoulder here and lost in app world, or actually seeing, knowing, hearing, learning what's around us more acutely, more keenly than we did.
So I definitely agree with Hiawatha there. I think it is connecting us with our world more. We can take advantage of different things, you know, check-ins. We can see that we're near a yogurt shop and we can get half off on, you know, buy one, get one free. But I also think there's an etiquette to apps and etiquette to using our smartphones. And some people are more aware of that than others. And, you know, if you're walking with your nose in your iPhone and you're going, you know, -2 miles per hour and running into people, you know, you got to go off to the side. You can't be in the middle of the mall looking and checking your check-ins and seeing what shops have sales where. You know, you need to kind of go off to the side, you know, be respectful of the people around you still.
I mean, maybe apps are going to get even better somehow at alerting us to the things that we might want to know. I don't know.
Well, you have to be careful.
Constraints of staring into your palm. Mm-hmm. Maybe soon it'll be behind my ear or it's talking to me from out of my tooth. I don't know.
Well, they can. There's nothing stopping them from having one that has a voice alert. You know, you have a Bluetooth headset and your app just tells you, hey, you're walking past, I don't know, Chinese restaurant. You want some Chinese food if that's what you're interested in. You could certainly do that.
What if we're walking together in that space, Hiawatha, and we're trying to have a conversation, but I notice your eyes are constantly flicking off to the latest offering from the frozen yogurt shop.
Well, I don't understand. I mean, that's just human nature, and that's an issue having nothing to do with technology.
Yeah.
That's got to do with Emily Post and etiquette and stuff like that.
Well,
if you're a jerk, you're a jerk.
Well, but then, I mean, the technology changes the way we interact. Lindy writes to us here. Mm-hmm. She says, in many ways, apps give us a sense that we can multitask, do more in less time. And she writes, which is both good and bad. Let's go to Kim in Burlington, Vermont. Kim, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a big fan.
Oh, great.
Yeah, this is a really interesting conversation to me. I'm a little frustrated, though, because I'm really concerned with privacy.
Mm-hmm.
And I have an Android phone, a Nook tablet, and an Apple computer.
So you're all wired up. So how concerned can you be?
All different, yeah. But I, you know, I mean, the whole thing, the privacy with Google, I think it's probably not too distant for anything, including the iPhone, although I don't have one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when if I want to download an app, you know, there goes my address book, there goes all of my personal information, you know, into net forever.
Mm-hmm.
I think all of this tracking and directing me. Even if you know, I don't even use Google anymore. I use DuckDuckGo because
I don't really care about privacy.
And so directed that I lose my curiosity for things I wouldn't otherwise see.
Yeah. Kim, I'm so glad you raised this. I mean, I don't know about everybody. For me, certainly, this remains a break. I still, when it's time to sort of put everything in there and share everything, I'm still like, oh, my gosh, where is this going to end up? And how much do I find it's a break on my participation. It is for Kim, too. What do you think?
I personally think that Google is one of the least disturbing of companies in this regard, because
and they're sharing everything with themselves now, but that's the least, so the rest is worse.
I only say this because Google actually does provide its users with tools for dealing with this.
Mm-hmm.
There are a number of things. First of all, you can create a Google account without telling them who you really are. So you can have all this information about somebody.
Joe Q. Public.
Right. Mm-hmm. You could be John Q. Public, and Google doesn't actually need to know who you really are. If you use a Google service that requires you to tell them who you really are, you can still control it. They have this feature called Dashboard. You can actually go in and selectively remove certain kinds of information or tell Google not to track certain kinds of things about what you do. Most companies that collect data on the internet do not do this.
Christina, with apps, the very same sort of amazement that we have at how they take us out into the world also means that they're sort of potentially tracking everything we're doing out in the world.
Potentially?
Okay,
potentially?
They are. What about it, Christina?
I think one of the biggest protections against that is just transparency. Apps need to say upfront what information they're using, what information they're tracking, what information they're storing, how they're going to use that information, and giving you the option to opt into that or opt out of that. And the default needs to be to opt out. Mm-hmm. I know California in particular is working on legislation to standardize how that's presented in app stores. Mm-hmm. And there's, I know, Apple and a number of other Google and other major smartphone manufacturers are in on this, and they want to make the users comfortable. That's their business. They want you to use the phones. They want you to download apps. And if you aren't comfortable doing that, then they're not doing a good job.
Hiawatha, tell us about some more that you like. You've got Level Up here, Tape a Talk, U Version. Tell us about those.
Okay, quickly. Oh, yeah, we're just going to do an app roundup here. Okay. I mentioned one called U Version, which is probably the most popular way of reading the Bible on the internet. It is called U Version. Version is called what it is because it has about 20 different English translations of the Bible.
Okay.
And all you do is you log on to the system and you can look up chapter, verse, get reading plans, etc. I just find it very convenient. It means I can have multiple translations of the Bible with me wherever I go. So
you
I like
mentioned
it.
Doing something after church. That means you were in church. So
Absolutely.
When you're in church, are you now got your you
yeah.
got your nose in your
yeah.
smartphone instead
I,
of the
I fire up
instead
U
of the Bible out of the back of the pew?
Absolutely, because our church, I go to People's Baptist, they're getting a little shabby on the Bibles there, so I whip out my smartphone instead. It's very handy,
and it'll take you to exactly what you want to read.
Exactly. It'll tell you, you know, here's the reading for today.
If you want an Aramaic, maybe it's there. I don't know.
Well, no, I don't. No, YouVersion doesn't. You can get that. You can get that. I'm sure there's an app for that.
What else is on your list here? Tape a Talk, Level Up. What are these?
That was just a free program. I download it. You know how reporters are supposed to carry little audio recorders with them? So do I. It's my smartphone. Yeah. I don't keep a separate recorder anymore because I find that the audio quality on phones is actually better than you usually get from those inexpensive digital recorders. I think it's because of all the software they use to clean up the voice. So it's a really good voice recorder. And I just use Tape-A-Talk. It's a free program and I can just record
good
people's
enough to
voices.
Tape music, let's say, if you were out.
I wouldn't say it was high quality enough for doing music. I use it for doing voices and interviews. Yeah. And I find that it works superbly for that. And you just get a really clear, crisp audio recording of anybody's voice. And I downloaded this on my Android phone and it's free and I use it all the time.
Boom. Level Up.
Level Up. That's a really interesting company. Level Up is this company where you get you sign up for the account with Level Up and you put your credit card or debit card number in it. Then whenever you want to buy something at a merchant that accepts Level Up, you load the app and a little image appears on the screen of your phone. You hold it up in front of a little scanner at the store, and that's all they need. They scan that image, and they automatically get your credit card number and just automatically process the transaction.
In the store, though.
In the store.
I see. So
you don't have to give
them your processing time.
Yes, and you don't have to give anybody your credit card.
Right.
It's actually more secure. All they do is they scan a little code. It's like one of those little square QR barcodes. It appears on the screen of your phone. You hold it up. They scan it. They never touch your credit card. And the transaction goes through.
If somebody runs off with my cell phone,
it's locked. You have to log in before Level Up works. When you start it, you have to put in a PIN number. You can't just run it. It's actually pretty secure.
Christina, what else have you got on your list there?
Let's see. So I've been playing with this voice-powered assistant app called Eevee. It's kind of similar to Siri in some ways, but it doesn't have that like calendar and contacts integration in your phone.
Okay.
But it provides this smart voice-powered search, and you can ask it questions, and it provides a brief response in-app. And you can ask it things about, you know, restaurants and businesses, and it pulls up Yelp information. Or you can ask it questions like, what is a platypus? And it'll give you a little brief one-sentence definition of what it is.
Hiawatha and I talked about Siri. This is Apple's voice offering. Is Eevee better, worse? You know, Siri's got some gaps and breaks and also cool stuff. How's it compare to Siri?
It's true. So I think Eevee's just different. There's a whole bunch of voice-powered assistant apps. You know, a lot of them are inspired by Siri. Some of them use similar technology. Some use different. So Eevee is more zeroed in on the voice-powered search aspect, whereas Siri's more focused on being an assistant. So Siri lets you make reminders, add an appointment in your calendar. Eevee doesn't do that. It's mostly directed at providing smart search through voice.
Yeah. Oh, I just wanted to mention one or two more quickly.
Yeah.
I did mention OnLive Desktop, which is really an app for the iPad, which is really a pretty cool idea. OnLive is this company that really lets you, what they've done is they run a remote Windows server, and you can use this app. You put it on your iPad. It's actually free. And when you activate the app, you are immediately taken to a Windows computer. This is on your iPad. You've got Microsoft Word. You've got Microsoft Excel.
All this stuff.
It's free.
Wow.
And you get 2 gigs of storage. You can now sit there and create Microsoft Word documents, Microsoft Excel spreadsheets, and other Microsoft stuff on an iPad. And it's something, you know, you wouldn't have thought it was possible, but it works, and it actually works pretty darn well.
You got another one, Tonito tonight?
Tonito. Well, that's actually an app. It's actually a program that's running on my home computer.
Okay.
Tonito turns it into a server so that I can access any information on my home computer wherever I am. Then you take an app.
It makes your home computer your cloud, in effect.
That's right. You've got it. You understand it exactly. My home computer is my cloud, all my music,
cool.
all my documents, etc. Now you put the Tonito app on your phone, and you can just sit there and there's your music. There's your documents anytime you want to. It's really cool.
AC writes this online. People have all kinds of relationships with these apps. He says, my stepdad tells Siri, this is Apple's voice thing, that he loves her. And she says, you are the wind beneath my wings, Joe. Joe uses his name. Fred in Derry, New Hampshire. Fred, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Great show.
What's going on, Fred?
Question and a comment. I'll make it brief.
Okay.
Question. It's already been explored a little bit, but Android or smartphone. The other question is I'm partially sighted. It has occurred to me that an app for folks who are partially sighted might be a good idea to get people around other people who can be their guide. Have vetted people doing this. So, general question about apps for folks with disabilities. Last is a comment and a suggestion. An app called the Filibuster Buster. It would be for guests, for hosts of radio shows to cut off people who talk on and on and on, and then they don't stop talking, but they keep going that
way. Hey, Fred. I lost Fred too soon. I wanted to ask him. He's partially sighted. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask what he would like in an app as a partially sighted person, but he's having fun with me there. Fred, I appreciate that.
I know
that's
funny. Working on that. I've just heard about
that. Camera's in the phone, so if the camera can see...
Mm-hmm.
And they're getting smarter and smarter. I wish I knew. Christine, any idea on that front or more broadly on for people with disabilities?
I know iOS has in the options menu, you can adjust the font size of the device. So you can make it larger if it's hard for you to see the tiny text.
Can I point my phone at a sign and have it read to me?
There are apps that do that, and a lot of voice-powered apps. You can turn on Google Voice Search, all sorts of different things, so you don't have to look at it so much. You can navigate using your voice, and that might make it a lot easier to use.
Yeah, I'm not as familiar with this as I should be, but I know they are indeed working on that. Things like apps that, as with desktop computers, where it speaks what it's doing to you instead of just showing it on the screen. Mm-hmm. That's already common on desktop computers, and there are apps that offer some measure of that where it'll tell you what it's doing as opposed to just showing it on the screen.
Fred, we hope you find something out there that helps with that. Your sense of humor, we see you've got all turned on, Fred. Mm-hmm. Shelley in Belmont, Massachusetts. Shelley, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
This is to make the point that some apps are completely disruptive technologies. I just got back from a trip in California.
Yeah.
There's an app called Waze, W-A-Z-E, that is a complete GPS. So you never have to pay for GPS again in a rental car situation or anywhere else.
Wow.
Who pays for GPS anyway? I mean, it's free on Android devices as it is.
Well, but I mean, a lot of people still, when they rent the car, they say, do you want GPS? And it's going to be X more per day.
Right.
People get it.
Well, if you've got, say, an Android phone, you don't pay a dime for it now. And it's built right in.
Shelley, how did it work compared to GPS built-in that you've had before? Was it just as good?
Just as good. Totally, I could do it. It had a verbal side to it.
Uh-huh.
It was just as good.
Now, this is an iPhone app?
Yep.
Uh-huh. Right, gotcha.
I learned about it at an Apple store.
Mm-hmm.
We'll picture you driving up that California coast with your very own Waze going on right there, Shelley, and thanks for your call. Mm-hmm. Where's it going? Hiawatha first to you. Where do we go here? What's coming?
I guess I'm not really sure. I mean, it seems to be pretty much unlimited because of the limitless human creativity combined with the fact that the machines are getting more and more powerful. You saw what Apple announced last week. The processors in these tablets and eventually these phones are becoming as powerful as the ones you find on desktop computers. So you'll be able to run ever more complex apps. The big limit might be in terms of the speed with which we can transmit data over the network.
Mm-hmm.
But even that, for most apps, I don't think is going to be a really serious limitation. And so I really don't see any end to this because people keep coming up with really profoundly useful things they do. So I don't know what the limits would be.
No frontier. Christine, where do you see the frontier? What's coming next? Where things may be headed in terms of app capacity, functions, what they offer?
I think we're in a great age. Developers are really exploring new ways we can interact with these touchscreen devices. I think we're going to be seeing new, more intuitive gestures to use to access information and to navigate through apps. I think they're increasingly going to offload what we have to remember, what we need to do. They're really becoming an extension of ourself, an extension of your mind. It's going to be so fascinating to watch, and then especially with kids that are growing up with iPhones and iPads. I can't imagine what's next for them. It kind of boggles my mind.
It's interesting. Maybe it may be as much about empathy and understanding human nature as it is about bits and bytes. Christina Bonnington with Wired in Austin, Texas. Christina, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Tom.
And Hiawatha Bray, you're great. Thanks for joining us today at the Boston Globe. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.